You guys can build a wall. You guys build a wall. Build a wall. It can be airtight. We'll just fill it with water. It's fine.
Maybe we can get it UNESCO heritage listed.
Maybe.
Guys, you're listening to Comes with Baggage. This is Caitlin,
and this is Chris,
and I am recording from the States now.
Yeah, a really sudden change of venue for you.
Yeah, basically, as everyone knows that's listening to this right now, there is all of the coronavirus, COVID-19, whatever you're calling it, stuff going on in the world. Pretty much everywhere at this point, I think, or at least Northern Hemisphere and Australia. I haven't
most
seen
of the Western
much.
World for sure.
Yeah, and so yeah, so I was living in Croatia as of last week, as of 3 days ago, and we got word that the borders were probably going to shut down soon. And we don't know how long this is going to go on and how long it's going to last. And I didn't want to get stuck in Croatia, especially if my visa stuff to getting my UK visa has been progressing more rapidly than expected. So I booked a last minute flight and basically had to take a bus, like a 5-hour bus overnight to Zagreb to a 9-hour flight. Layover in Paris, landed in the States, had to fill out one of those health questionnaires that basically ask, have you been in any of these like Schengen zone countries? Because Trump blocked everyone. Well, not.
Yeah.
See, I don't know if he's actually blocked everyone or because there was a lot of people on my flight. It was mostly Americans, but there was
a lot
of people.
Yeah, I think it's anyone who's not a resident of the United States is not able to fly in at the moment.
Okay.
A lot of countries are doing it.
Yeah, because there's a lot of people on my flight that were most people were Americans, but I know by accent and things like that, there were some non, at least English speaking, people with French accents, people with all different accents, that were coming in with me. But we had to fill out this questionnaire that asked if we had visited the last, you know, all of the European countries in the last 14 days, if we had knowingly been in touch with anyone with coronavirus, if we had any of the symptoms, and you had to mark yes or no, and blah blah blah. And then as everyone was getting off the plane, there were like two guys basically in hazmat suits checking our temperatures. I got a 97.3 Fahrenheit, so I passed.
Nice, well done, that's a personal best.
Yeah, and then got to the customs, which of course all the planes and stuff as well, and like customs lines and everything were so empty because so much limited travel now. And the guy though at customs, like, we'll get into this, like, I get the social distancing thing and staying in to help prevent the spread of it and all of that stuff, but I get in and like there's one customs guy who's just acting normally. He's sitting at his little thing, they're just collecting our little papers that we have to print out from the screen, and he's wearing gloves, and like that part I get, but there's another guy wearing gloves. But, like, he's out of his seat, standing, like, 3 feet behind his podium and just, like, holding his hand out. And as people are just, like, handing him the thing, he was like, I'm not getting fucking close to these people. Like, who knows where the fuck they just came from. I'm not fucking, like, getting sick. And I'm like, oh, my God, you're such a tool. I hate this country. Like, there's...
Damn. Well,
I'm like,
it's going crazy everywhere at the moment. Like... Yeah, well, Georgia just closed its borders today. Like, they announced that no non-Georgians are allowed to enter for at least the next 2 weeks. And I know Australia instituted that this morning and didn't think to tell anyone. So a lot of people are arriving in Australia and being told they have to go straight into quarantine for the duration of their trip. New Zealand instituted it over the weekend.
Real quick, so did they, for people flying to Australia, even if it's Australians, do they have to be quarantined as well?
I think also for the Australians, yes. But it's more of a problem for people who are coming for their week-long holiday who now have to spend the entire trip in a hotel room quarantined.
Well, luckily...
So it's a bit of a nightmare.
There has been a lot... One great thing, like, especially the fact that tourism is obviously going to take pretty much probably one of the biggest hits, small businesses and tourism. I've heard a lot of airlines and hotels and things like that are doing free cancellations or flight changes or refunds and all of that stuff. I got a bunch of emails from different airlines that I'm like a frequent flyer member of, saying that like if you're flying in the next 72 hours, they'll like you'll be seen first, and then anyone flying after that, like you'll be, seen next. And they're issuing a lot of refunds or like vouchers to use at a later date.
Yeah, in the safari industry, most of the companies and like all the hotels and airlines are giving like free postponement up to 15 months because they're like, we'd like you to still come.
Yeah.
With cancellation being pretty relaxed as well. So I mean it's a weird time to travel. I have so much free time right now because no one's going on safari because it's low season and no one's booking safaris because they're all like I guess just waiting for this to all blow over before they commit to anything.
Yeah.
So it's been weirdly quiet. Like I wake up and there's like no emails in my inbox and usually it's like the first 4 or 5 hours of my day are going through that. So yeah, a lot of free time, a lot of Netflix, a lot of video games, working on a novel. So that's all my news is literally I've just been a homebody.
That's good though. Like, that's one thing that, I mean, I'll admit, at first I wasn't taking it as seriously. And I don't know if it's just because when I was in Croatia, when all of this started happening, it was only, I think what by the time I left, there were only 12 people, and they were pretty much all in Zagreb and Rijeka, which is very north in the country. And so all the numbers were just so small to me, and there was no one in Split. And so I just wasn't like, yes, we weren't like shaking hands and hugging and stuff like that anymore. And like we were washing our hands often and stuff, but I was still going out to eat. I was still going to my friend's bar and whatnot. And then when I got back to the States, and I think the thing is, like, and I knew this was going to happen, and I think I mentioned this last episode, like, I knew the States, because of how fucked everything is with the healthcare, that it was probably going to be the worst here, because either people are scared of getting tested because of the cost, or they won't be able to get treatment because of the cost.
Or
And
you've got these people who have this idea that it's like impinging on their freedom to tell them to stay
yeah.
home. Like I saw this one former Miss Nevada got into an argument with AOC on Twitter because AOC said like, "Hey guys, like if you're young and healthy, I know you want to go out, but maybe just stay in this weekend because you don't know who you're going to expose to the virus." And this girl's like, "I went to Red Robin and I took my damn time eating it because I'm an American and I'm free." And it's like,
Ugh.
cool, you're also a massive cunt. Like,
So fucking entitled. Like, it's ridiculous. Like, that is just reeks of entitlement. And the thing is, because people think that they are invincible almost.
Well,
And,
because
like, I
if you're our
understand.
age, you kind of are.
Yeah, well, it's
Like,
not even, like, for the most part, if we get sick, generally, we're not going to probably have that big of an effect or toll on us.
yeah.
But this is so ridiculously, what's the word I'm looking for?
It's just so much
Easy
bigger than
to,
us. Like,
but it's easy. It's so easy to,
it's like
what's the
highly
word I'm looking
infectious.
for?
Contagious,
Infectious.
infectious.
Contagious. That's contagious was the word I was looking for. Yeah, it's so highly contagious, and it can be transmitted through the air. That
And
like
just from
the
touching things as well. Like, it can stay on certain certain surfaces for up to
surfaces.
3 days. But I mean, one of the most worrying things is, as a young person, yes, you'll probably be fine. I think the statistical chance of you dying from it is like 0.02%. It's very low. But Korea, where they've had mandatory free testing across the whole country, has found that almost 30% of people carrying the disease are in that 20 to
Are,
30 age gap.
yep,
They're not
yeah.
sick. They might have a sniffle, or they might have no symptoms. But that's nearly one in three cases is not in hospital, they're just passing the disease around. And that's where we are responsible. Because if you're 80 and you get it, you're probably going to die. Or if you're like my
Yeah.
sister and you have no immune system, there's a good chance it could kill you. Whereas
Yeah.
you and me, we're fine. All we have to do, all we're being asked to do, is to stay home. Like, which I know in America is harder because of there's no sick leave for a lot of jobs and you're not supposed to take sick leave even if you've got it. But it's like someone tried to compare it to D-Day. And it's like, no, like our grandparents went and had to like die on a foreign beach That's a lot less than what you're being asked to do. You're asked.
You're literally being asked to sit on your couch and watch fucking Netflix.
Exactly. Like, yes, it sucks, and it's going to cause a lot of people a lot of trouble financially. I think there'll be a lot of bankruptcies and a lot of, not just from businesses, but from individual people. Hopefully the governments in, you know, respective countries are taking steps to help with that. I know Australia's got obviously quite a good welfare system. They're looking at giving out a incentive, like a, what's it called? It's more like a stimulation package. So they're giving money to people in lower incomes, A, to help boost the economy, but also because, you know, you're probably going to need it. I know in the US, like a lot of bigger companies are being good about it and they're paying sick leave even for people who don't have it. Yeah. Or they're, you know, like I know Taco Bell is one of them, is paying sick leave for everyone, which is awesome. I think this is really where we sort out, you know, yeah, you can hate on socialism or whatever you want or you like, but at the end of the day, the countries that are handling this best, South Korea and Taiwan, have socialized healthcare and they're looking after their citizens.
Well, I think it's really important. That's the thing that, like, if we go to what I hope people learn from this, like, I get, especially, I mean, a lot of my friends in Croatia and stuff like that have small businesses, bars, hostels, people that were kind of depending on the fact that the season was just getting started, and then like 52% of Airbnb bookings were down and like cancellations were up to like 75% or something, and soon the borders are going to close. I thought it was going to be today, but I think now it's Wednesday.
Eesh.
The Croatian borders are closing, so no one's going to be able to come anyways, and so this is all money that like people depend on. And I get that. Like, my friend in New York, they're shutting all of the bars and restaurants except for like takeout and delivery. And so if you're a server, you don't have a job right now.
Yeah, it's
and especially in a place like New York that is so expensive.
And Oh my god!
Like, it's not, even if you are making good money, you know, you can still be living paycheck to paycheck because your rent is 50% of your income.
It is crazy.
But also not going outside and not taking public transport and not doing anything. Hopefully you're not spending money either.
Yeah.
But also I just hope that people learn a few things from this. And one of them is, you know, I don't think a lot of millennials are that financially responsible, or I don't even want to generalize millennials. Like, a lot of people in general are not financially responsible.
And if you're a casual, like, you really can't be. Like, in certain industries, you can't be that financially responsible. You can be as, like, tight-pursed as you want. If you're only getting 12 hours a week in, like, a grocery store, chances are you don't have anything to save after you've paid your rent and your bills.
Yeah, absolutely. Oh, I get that. And this is not for people that do genuinely live paycheck to paycheck, but I do know a lot of people that live beyond their means.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, for sure.
Or not so much live beyond their means. They just enjoy their paycheck and then don't really put much into savings.
Yeah.
And I used to be one of them, so I'm not like looking down on these people whatsoever. I'm just hoping that this is a wake-up call that, like, you know, anything could happen. You never know. And so you need to prepare for the future. You need to save your money. You need to have an emergency fund, like a cushion, so that you can take care of yourself.
And that extends to businesses. There's Rugby League in Australia has literally talking about needing government help to survive if it has to stop the season. And I'm like, how do you, I mean, I get you can't plan for coronavirus, but you probably should have something set aside just in case a war broke out or something stopped you from like making money. I mean, people talked about, you know, like, there's so many movies and books about like a disease causing the apocalypse, and it's always people dying in the streets and zombies and rioting. And it's so weird to see a pandemic that isn't killing people in droves. I mean, it's not an inconsiderable number, but it's not like wiping out population.
I mean,
but it's
300 people died yesterday in Italy.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's like, I'm not saying it's not a big number, but, you know, like the movies like Outbreak and stuff, they show it being like tens of thousands of people and, you know, the world's decimated. Yeah. But what's being decimated more than anything is just like the economy. Yeah, the economy, and just we're finding out how reliant we are on, like, for example, all the world's production is done in China. And when that broke down for 2 months, like, the world kind of lost their shit. And it's so, I mean, if there's lessons to be learned, and there's probably going to be a lot of lessons learned before this is all over, it's, it, I mean, it's, th- I mean, I can't even put it into it. There's not one lesson. There's so many we're going to learn from this about healthcare, about looking after each other, about saving.
Saving your money, looking after even your own health.
And looking after people around
caring,
you. Like,
yeah, caring the other people. That's the thing that, like, going back to this whole, the people in their like 20s to 30s that aren't really doing, like, so I'm staying in Philadelphia with a friend right now who she's actually not even home. Basically, when I was had to come back to the States, I was like, I had to come back to New York, or the cheapest way I get, which is to New York. And I was like, I don't want to fucking be in New York. My friends that are in New York right now are like, it's crazy. Like,
yeah,
everyone's freaking out. And I'm like, I don't want to be somewhere where everyone's like freaking out. That's not the way to react to this.
Mm-hmm.
It's to just by like freak out and everyone's being selfish and buying up everything in the stores that they don't really need as much of. And so I was like, screw this. And I have a friend in Philly. And honestly, I met this girl 8-9 years ago in Prague. Probably spent a grand total of 12 hours with her over 3 days. Met up with her maybe 4 years ago for lunch as I was passing through Chicago and she used to live there. And I knew she lived in Philly and I messaged her and I was like, hey, like, and luckily the hostels down here are much cheaper as well, but I didn't really want to stay in a hostel just because everyone's traveling.
Yeah.
And it's more probably prevalent in somewhere like that.
And it's hard to work from a hostel sometimes.
Yeah. Yeah. But, I was like, you know, I think I'm going to come down to Philly. I don't want to be in New York. And she's like, I'm actually out of town right now. She's away this weekend for her birthday. And she was like, but my neighbor has my keys. You're more than welcome to stay at my house. Like, I've got two kittens that'll probably terrorize you, but like, help yourself. Like, I literally have known this girl probably for 24 hours I've spent with her in my entire life.
Wow.
Like, we met 8 years ago in Prague, and she's literally given me the keys to her house. I've been living in her apartment for 3 days. She comes home today.
That's awesome.
Like, she's messaged me and was like, stay as long as you need. Like, don't worry about anything. And I'm like, oh my God, I'm going to like take you out to dinner. But now that's not happening because we're not going out. But I'll cook her a big dinner. I'll order us food to be delivered. but I've like tidied up her house. Like, I'm so grateful because I've got a place to stay. She's like, you can stay as long as you want. I think she's coming back today and then leaving again, but she might come, like, she should be back soon, and then we're just going to hang out and self-quarantine with each other.
Nice.
But yeah, like it's, oh, so what I was going to say is there's a bar literally next door to her, well, almost next door to her house on the corner, and all day yesterday they were having a huge St. Patty's Day party.
Oh, and right.
I ordered food for dinner and I went downstairs to collect it from the Uber Eats driver. And there's just like tons of people stumbling outside of this bar and like singing songs and drunk. And like, by the time I went to bed at 9, I could still hear people. And I could hear people like people definitely in their early 20s running on the street being like, oh, you slut. Like,
this is
ridiculous. And I'm like, you guys literally don't give a fuck. Like, you're pretending like this is all fine. And I swear it's not until someone is directly affected, that someone they know gets sick.
Yeah,
or
exactly.
Worse, that then they're going to start caring about it. And then that's going to be too late. You can't wait until it's personally affecting you. And also, that's really fucking selfish.
That's the problem, though. That's why it's been an issue, because it's so hard to quarantine an entire population. I mean, China pulled it off because China's a totalitarian dictatorship where they can just say, stay in your home. And Korea and Taiwan have probably managed it better than anyone by basically just making it really accessible and educating the population. And I think that's an issue that the Western world is going to have to deal with, because in the US's case, you guys don't have that healthcare access, for example, and there's a lot of mistrust in the government. And in Australia, there's just a lot of entitlement. There's just a lot of people who, don't want to give up.
Well.
Oh, yeah. I mean, and let's be honest, both of our governments are fucking incompetent. And the UK, we can add them to that list.
Yeah.
It's like a very scary but also fascinating time to be alive. Just to see how it's unfolding.
Interestingly enough that you bring up the UK, I spoke to my mom a couple days ago and she's like, it's the worst here. She's like, our government literally said, oh, we're all going to get it anyways. Might as well just all catch it. We might as well just all get it so that we can all become immune to it and get over it and let it just happen really fast and then go away really fast.
Makes
no
sense.
And then just anyone that's old, just stay inside.
Yeah, it makes no sense. Herd immunity doesn't just develop in one generation. So basically, yeah. A lot of people are going to die, and then they'll get it again in October.
Yeah.
the Western world.
Yeah, it's just, I'm just, like, it's so, and I'm trying to be so, like, a few days ago, just literally, like, 3 or 4 days ago, I was in a similar mindset. And yeah. I think it was just because it was so far removed from me in Croatia, because it was, like, only 12 people and very, very north of the country. The cats are freaking out. They're getting stir crazy from being inside. They are indoor cats, though, so they have to stay inside. But they're spazzing out and playing with each other. but, yeah, so, I mean, I was taking precautions, but I wasn't taking extreme precautions. But to do nothing, to, like, still go about your business, especially, like, literally the worst possible people in this situation, if you look at how Italy handled it, is by continuing to go about your life, especially in bars. Like, drinking. Like, you're not taking precautions when you're drinking.
No.
You're grabbing each other's glasses. You're drinking out of each other's drinks. You're
drunk people kissing, don't even remember that. Like, Drunk people don't even remember to put condoms on. I can't trust them to keep their hands clean.
No, absolutely not. so it's just like, honestly, the quicker that this, the more people stay inside, the quicker this passes and we get through this. And then the quicker you have your freedom back and the less people have to suffer for it.
Exactly. And that's, I think, hopefully what people are starting to realize around the world now. It seems to starting to be more of a thing, even here in Georgia, where cases are very low. A lot of my friends have already started, if not like fully self-isolating, at least minimizing how much they're out and about. I know we've been basically cooped up for the weekend, and I mean, as an introvert, I don't hate it. But I think poor Rochelle's getting a little bit twitchy.
Well, she's an Enneagram 7 like me.
Yeah,
I was going so stir crazy last night, and I went for a walk yesterday morning, and I didn't go in like anywhere. I didn't, you know, talk to anyone or do anything. Like, I literally just walked around the city. And so kept my hands to myself and whatnot. And just to look around and see everything. And I haven't been to Philly in a long time, and it was beautiful. And then I came home and I was like, all right. And I almost, I thought about going to a restaurant for dinner. And I was like, and I looked on their thing and it was like, you know, we're taking all the necessary precautions to be hygienic and blah, 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 blah. And then that's fine, and I appreciate that restaurants and stuff are doing that, and I appreciate that they're going to take a huge hit from this financially. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, it's still encouraging people to come and be outside and be in the same room as each other. And like we said earlier, like, stuff stays on surfaces for a few days, and it can be transmitted through the air. Mm-hmm. It's just not smart. It's just not smart. Yeah. It's not worth it. Rant over. But I just, people, if you're listening, just stay inside. FaceTime people. Yeah, listen to our podcast. Listen to our past podcast. It's the perfect time to catch up on our great episodes.
I caught my lovely wife listening to an episode just the other day. I was like, is that my voice coming from the bathroom? And my wife's in there listening to our China episode.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
The one she did?
No, the one that we did Josh with Josh did. about Xinjiang and Hong Kong and all that. So that was, it's always, I mean, catch up on your podcasts. Read a book, watch some TV, work on that novel.
I've got some great, anyone that's listening that needs some shows on Netflix that you want to watch, highly, highly, highly recommend.
Oh, we should. The Stranger?
Five. Yep. Or the Five. Mm-hmm. And Safe. They're all Harlan Coben. I don't know. He's a writer. He wrote some books. All TV shows based off of his books. And they're all on Netflix. And they are all super twisty-turny. You literally have no idea how it's going to end all the way up until the end. It's insane. And they're all so good. And I've just finished The Five last night. And that was the twisty-turniest one yet. So save that one for last, or else you'll be disappointed by the other two.
I was going to say we should put out a list of bingeable Netflix shows on our socials to help people out. But we should probably get to today's episode, as we're both. So because you were fleeing from Croatia, we couldn't record as we normally would. So my lovely wife, Rochelle, the first lady of podcasting, as she's been asked to be called, subbed in for you when we interviewed today's guest, Joel. Now, Joel has a YouTube channel and a blog, World Heritage Journey, and he's literally trying to hit every single World Heritage site in the world. There are more than 1,100 of them, so it's quite a task.
Holy fuck.
I know, I had no idea. We had a really good chat with Joel this week about both what a World Heritage Site is and what that represents, the best ones he's been to, the most underwhelming, and there are some weird ones on there. and also just about how, you know, if you're interested in tackling that yourself, how you can start from your own backyard. For example, there's three here in Georgia, and one of them is a 20-minute cab ride away. So I'm going to try and get out to that one this week when it stops raining slash being, you know, the apocalypse.
Yeah.
Nice. Yeah, we had a... Yeah, what's that?
I just said nice.
Yeah. So we had a great chat with Joel. You know, we chatted for about an hour. We've got a lot of really interesting stuff to talk about. You'll find out a lot about World Heritage Sites you didn't know existed, World Heritage Sites that you do, and also about how much of an important part it plays in not only protecting tourism sites, but also like intangible cultural things that you probably don't think to visit, but UNESCO does such a good job of making sure that that's still there for future generations to enjoy.
Yeah. Awesome.
Yeah. So shall we jump right in?
Yeah. Enjoy the episode, guys.
Okay. Well, thanks for joining us today, Joel.
No worries. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, no, it's good to have you on. For those who heard the intro, you'll know that Kate is not here today. Instead, we have the first lady of podcasting. My lovely wife, Rochelle, is subbing in.
I'm back.
Yeah, she's back. and we've actually hung out in person with Joel, so we figured it'd be a nice, easy thing to go. Where did we meet, Joel?
Vietnam, right?
No, we met before that.
Oh, What, you, I thought you meant when we last hung out.
No, you met Joel in Vietnam. We met at T-Bex. No, I met your wife on a fam trip.
Yes, you did. That's right. In Indonesia.
And then we hung out in T-Bex.
And also me.
We did.
I was there.
Yep.
Were you there?
It was a lot of fun.
I was also there.
we weren't a couple, an official couple yet when we first met up with the couples.
Yes.
Yeah. Yes.
Is that awkward phase where...
An unofficial couple.
Yeah, is that awkward phase where... we were kind of dating, but not dating, and so we were trying to play it cool, which just meant avoiding each other a lot, and then trying to see each other a lot as well. It was weird.
Awkward.
Yeah, it was still, you were the guys that were like, they're hanging out a lot.
Yeah.
I wonder what that means. Maybe they're friends. Maybe not. Who knows?
Not even us in the
Maybe
time.
Not. We're not friends.
No, we're... So, yeah, how have you been? Where in the world are you right now?
So I'm currently in Sydney, in the house that I grew up in, funnily enough.
Nice.
So we haven't done as much traveling as we would like this year. Mm-hmm. Obviously, things are a bit strange right now with the virus and all that kind of thing.
Yep.
So we've been, my wife and I, we've been traveling for almost 4 years now. We've been digital nomads, which has been a lot of fun.
How are you finding it being back home then? Is it being a bit of a tough adjustment?
Yeah, because we don't have our own space, you know. We do a bit of pet sitting, so we look after other people's dogs because we have a dog ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
But other than that, it's sort of, you know, we stay with someone's parents, we stay with my parents and my wife's parents, which when you're in your 30s is not ideal, but, you know. You make it work.
Yeah, Rochelle and I get that. When we go home, we spend a few months with my parents, a few months with hers. So we definitely get it. It's an adjustment.
Yeah.
It's always good to see them. But after like a couple of months, you start to feel like you're back in high school again. Like,
you just don't want to step on anyone's toes, you know what I mean? Like in a smaller space.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Or, you know, if people are having issues and you're sort of like, oh, this is awkward.
This
house isn't quite big enough.
Do you find you revert back to like a younger version of yourself when you're home for too long? Like I find that I definitely start to let mum do my laundry while I'm home.
I don't let her do the laundry, but yeah, I really have to stop myself from, you know, I just have to keep reminding myself, you know, you are an adult. You can wash the sheets. You can wash the towels.
I think the thing with
you don't expect dinner every night.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, with your family's house, the laundry is all the way in the main house, and we're staying in a cottage. So a lot of times we'll put the laundry on, and then we'll take too long to get to it. And your mom like needs to put another load on, so she'll just hang it up for us. And I just feel so guilty. I'm like, oh no.
Mom loves that. Mom loves that shit though, because then she can remind us all that she's doing for me.
Yeah, I get that.
So when you do travel though, you have a YouTube channel about visiting World Heritage sites.
Yeah, that's right. It's called World Heritage Journey. It's just youtube.com/World Heritage Journey. And yeah, we're basically aiming to visit every single World Heritage site, all 1,121 of them, and make a short documentary about each one.
And what I mean, for those who are like playing at home, they've probably heard the term World Heritage before, but what exactly does that mean in like real terms?
Right. So, I'll go back a little bit. So UNESCO is part of the United Nations. It's their education, science and culture organization, hence the name. And a World Heritage Site is just something that they've decided has outstanding universal value to humanity. That's quite vague, but that's essentially their definition.
And what does that in, like, what does that provide for a place aside from the naming rights and like the bragging rights? Does it offer any special protections?
Well, yeah. So it was originally set up so that it identifies, protects, and preserves essentially the world's heritage, whether that's cultural heritage or natural heritage as well.
I guess then it covers a really broad like variety of sites. I mean, obviously, there's the obvious ones, like I imagine, the Great Wall of China. I know in Ngorongoro Crater in Tanzania. Here in Georgia, it's their winemaking method is just World Heritage listed. Yeah. So the Kvevri,
it's like a concept.
Yeah, it's like the concept of how they make wine is World Heritage listed. I don't know how you protect a concept. I guess you just
very carefully.
Yeah. And how often are places added to World Heritage? Is there like a yearly update for it, or is it just kind of
So they have a conference once a year. It's usually in the northern summer, so July, August, I think. And then they just have a conference and they decide what's going to get onto the World Heritage list and what's not. So it's actually quite a long and involved process to get to that point. So basically, it actually starts with a local government, whether that's a council or a national government or whoever, and they decide that we think this can make it onto the World Heritage List. We think it's important enough. And so they put together a big dossier, a big nomination file about, you know, this is why we think it would make it. They send it off to UNESCO and they say, okay, we think we can probably put this on the World Heritage List in, say, 2023 or 2024 or whatever the case may be. And so once that's done, then UNESCO will send an independent NGO team. They have one called ICOMOS for cultural sites and IUCN for natural sites. And basically the idea is that it's an independent party. They go there and they look at it, and it's a team of experts in architecture or, you know, birding or whatever the site's relevance is, I suppose. And they will then make a recommendation that, this is worth going on the World Heritage List. We need to study it further, or no, this shouldn't go on, which does happen as well.
Like the world's biggest ball of yarn. It doesn't qualify. Much. They keep trying, bless them, but they're just never going to get on.
So I'm really curious, what made you decide to visit all of the World Heritage Sites? Like, you hear a lot of people that are like, oh, I'm going to go to every single country in the world. Whereas you're
like, that's not ambitious enough.
But it's also different, because instead of saying, I'm going to go to every single country, I'm going to go to all of these sites and places of historic value. So what made you decide to do that?
That's a good question, actually, because I think when I started, I probably didn't quite realize how challenging it was going to be. But I guess I'm someone that I've always had a real interest in history. I always liked engaging with culture and that kind of thing when I've been traveling. And when we started traveling full time, we were sort of thinking, what can we do to focus our travels? You know, we don't want to be sort of just people that drift endlessly across the world, as nice as that would be. You know, it's always nice to have boxes to tick and goals to aim for, I suppose. So I came across the World Heritage List and I looked at it and thought, wow, there's a lot of really interesting stuff on there, stuff that you wouldn't necessarily think of on a tourist itinerary. Mm-hmm. And I looked at it and went, well, I've done 50.
Shit. There's not a bad start.
Not that many to go.
Not that many. It's just a cheeky 900 and something.
900.
Yeah, that's right.
87 more.
What was I going to say? It's also really good as an influencer, though, because it gives you a niche and it gives you a thing that makes you different. You know, like, I wish I had done that, because my blog's just like, I'm a dude and I travel to places and it's really hard. I'm a dude. I travel and I'm from Australia and I'm on the road. So you've already got sort of, I imagine you, are you growing an audience of people who are really interested in following in your footsteps?
There's actually already a community of people that travel to World Heritage Sites.
Oh.
Which is something I only discovered afterwards. And some people have made staggering progress.
Really?
Like, my wife and I were just over 500.
Holy shit.
I'm on 504. Yeah, that's a lot. And my wife is on, I think she's on about 510, something like that.
Oh, I was about to ask who was winning. Damn, she's got me beat.
Some of these are not easy to get to. Like, I was just reading through some of my old blog posts yesterday, and we hiked the Kumano Kodo in Mie Prefecture in Japan. And, like, the the areas of the route that are World Heritage listed, there's, like, two small areas. They're, like, not, they're not near the tourist trail. Like, they are not, you'd have to, like, spend a few days getting down there just to get to those World Heritage listed trails. So it must really make your time in a country be a lot more intensive, like getting to all of these different places.
Yeah, absolutely. So when we visited that site, for example.
Oh, you bet.
Yeah, we did actually.
Nice.
We were in Japan late last year, in October last year, actually. So we had plans, because there's, with that one, there's actually quite a few different components to it. So there's sort of some of the temples and the pilgrimage routes and the shrines and all that sort of stuff. And so actually what we had planned to do was, you know, we'd go to a handful of the different temples and see a few different things. And as much as I would love to do the hike that you guys did, which
you don't have 2 weeks to spare.
Incredible.
You have a solid 2 weeks to set aside for that.
Maybe next time.
Yeah.
But it did look great. The day that we'd planned to do that, we were staying in Osaka and the super typhoon crashed into Japan. So that was a pretty intense day.
Jeez. Is that, would you say, was that, okay, which has been the hardest World Heritage Site for you to actually, that you've visited so far, to actually get to and experience?
Oh, wow.
Putting you on the spot.
I hadn't actually considered that. It's just, yeah, I guess some of them, you know, you have to, you're driving forever. Actually, I would say there's probably two, and they're right next to each other, right up the top of Norway, way above the Arctic Circle. There's a little town called Alta. It's not far from Hammerfest, which is about as far as you can get going north in Europe. And there's two sites there. There's one with some ancient rock paintings, and there's also a geographic line, essentially, which is quite an odd World Heritage Site, but it's a very important scientific one, because it was about how they, the first people, measured the size and the shape of the Earth.
Oh.
Which, yeah, when you put it into context, it's like, oh, actually, that's kind of interesting.
Does it look impressive, or is it literally just a, like a line? What is it?
It's a trig point. So, you know, sometimes you climb to the top of a hill and there's like a little concrete pillar about man high, a little post on it. It was literally that. So,
we
drove to the top of Norway for 2 weeks, climbed a mountain. Well, it wasn't a mountain, it's just a hill, but climbed a hill. And we looked at a trig point.
Now, on the topic of last week's episode, though, did you get a killer selfie with it?
I did, of course.
Oh, well, good, good. Because otherwise, it doesn't really matter that you were there.
It's all for the gram.
It's all for the gram. And actually, we were talking about Instagram husbands last week, and you, when we first met, you basically said that was your job. Like, you were like, yeah, I'm Instagram husband.
You know how people, like, they go to the one spot in Bali to get the same photo? I'm just imagining all of these Instagram influencers going to this spot in Norway to get the same set.
To get the trig point selfie.
I need to get up there.
Yeah, I got it.
Yeah. Yeah. It's probably a bit out of reach of them, maybe. There's not many five-star hotels up there for them to, you know.
It doesn't look quite as good in their Instagram feed either. Just a concrete slab on a mountaintop. You never know.
Yeah.
And on the same token, do you remember your first World Heritage site? Like, you probably didn't even know you were doing it at the time, but...
No, so I don't remember exactly what it was, but I can make a guess. It would have been either the Sydney Opera House or the Blue Mountains.
So
they're both quite, they're quite near Sydney. Yeah,
yeah, yeah,
I grew up near there.
Well, what's the weirdest one you've been to?
The trig point's hard to top.
I was about to say, is it that one was weird. But I'm like, Norwegian mountain.
I mean, any other concepts like what Georgian winemaking process? I guess you'd just go on a wine tour and be like, "This is Kvevri. This is how they make wine." But like, what? Yeah, what's another weird one or a weird concept?
There's, I think, the scientific ones always sort of go into that category of. Something important happened here, but is no longer here. So, for example, when we were in Beijing, we went to a site just on the outskirts, I think maybe to the west of Beijing, called Jokodian. And it's where they dug up a skeleton from millions of years ago anyway. And it's called Peking Man.
And it's one
of, you've heard of Peking Man?
The name's familiar, yeah.
Mm.
Yeah, it's, I mean...
It's one of the oldest sort of hominid species ever found. I think it's actually pre-Homo sapien. I think it's Homo erectus, I think they call it.
Okay, all right.
It's the kind of thing you go there and it's like, well, this is where we found it, but it's not here. So,
there's nothing...
Fun!
Is it like, is there at least like a memorial plaque or something, or is it just like the basement of a 7-Eleven?
Well... The thing is, it's China, and they're quite serious about their World Heritage sites. So there's a big museum about it. So.
Nice. Well, that's good that they're at least... Because I know there are certain places in China where you're like, oh, this used to be a city wall. Now it's a highway. Mm. Or in Nanjing, where I lived, there was a district called Gulo, which means... Is it bell tower or drum tower?
I would say drum tower.
Drum tower, I think. But the drum tower is just gone. Like, and everyone still calls it the Drum Tower, but if you go over there, there's just a roundabout and, like, an intercontinental hotel. And it's like, cool, China, I'm sure that was important at some point in your
long
and storied
history. But when it's possible to make a museum about something that no longer exists,
they'll do
they're all over it. Because have, like, a museum and stuff for the city wall that they tore down.
Oh, they do? So. There we go. They build museums and they tear down.
Or plaques or whatnot.
Yeah, of course.
Old China. And what's your white whale? Like, what is the World Heritage site that you're just like, shit, I want to make sure I get... I mean, obviously you're trying to hit all of them, but what's the one that if you could go right now, which would it be?
I would probably say Machu Picchu, because I've never been to South America just at all. It's the only continent aside from Antarctica that I haven't made it to. So, and I think it's probably the biggest highlight on the list that I haven't actually made, so... that would be, definitely number one, I think. But there's just so many. Even though I've seen 500, I still haven't seen 600. So there's definitely some gems in there.
Those are rookie numbers, man. You got to bump up those numbers.
Is it one of those things? Because you said they're always adding to it. So is it one of the... Because we met a guy when we were doing brewery tours in Beijing, and he had this desire to see every brewery in Denver.
Yeah, not even Colorado, just Denver.
Yeah. Wow. And he said every time he would get close, they would just open more breweries. And it was like this impossible dream that he would never achieve. I'm like, oh, okay.
In hindsight, I think he's just an alcoholic.
Maybe. But is it one of those things where, like, as soon as you start going up in the numbers, they, like, let's say you see five, then they just add another five? Or is it, or are there people who are actually really close or have already achieved it?
So, yeah, there is kind of an element of chasing your tail a little bit. I mean, they only add sort of about 20 to 30 in any given year. So
that's more than I thought.
That's a lot.
I was thinking it was going to be, like, three or four. So, damn, I'm never going to catch up.
I mean, that is kind of one of the issues as well, is that when they keep adding 20 or 30, there's not 20 or 30 Machu Picchus to add every year.
Probably.
So
it's fair.
It's trending more towards, it's trending more towards the trig point levels. So.
Oh, okay. So there's probably like at the back end, you're going to have a whole bunch of really underwhelming things to hit.
Yeah. You kind of, whenever I'm there, I always try and look on the bright side and say, oh, you know, this is interesting, or... I never prejudge and say this site is going to be crap, because, you know, if you go into it with a bad mindset, you know, there's always something to enjoy about it, because people have come here and said this is important for whatever reason. And it's, I guess it's up to me as trying to make a documentary as well to say, well, okay, this is important and here's why, and try and bring out some enthusiasm about it as well. So,
yeah.
And sometimes that's tougher than others.
It's funny because I actually often approach things with a negative mindset on purpose so that that way I'm pleasantly surprised. And when I was like a young emo teen, I used to say I always went in expecting the worst but hoping for the best. And so for me, like, I'll go to see like a movie and I'll be like, I've heard this is shit. And I'll come out and be like, that was actually better than I thought. So
I have to just ignore him, because I live my life in the exact opposite way, where I just get really excited about things. And if they don't go well, I'm like, oh, I rationalize it, right? Oh, it wasn't that bad.
Yeah.
And if they do go well, I'm like, this was the best ever.
Yeah.
And so when he's being pessimistic, I'm like, can you just stop like shitting on my parade for like 2 seconds?
But I know what you mean about this. There's like World Heritage sites that maybe don't have that same shine on them.
Mm-hmm.
I'm relatively confident. Olduvai Gorge in Tanzania, that's World Heritage listed, I'm pretty sure.
Not on its own, so it's actually part of...
Of Ngorongoro?
It's either part of that one or the Serengeti, because those two are actually separate.
It'll probably be Ngorongoro then. It's inside the conservation area.
Yeah, okay. It's part of one of those two, I forget which.
Well, that makes more sense to me, because Ngorongoro Crater, for those who don't know, is like one of the most stunning wilderness areas in the world.
Mm.
And Olduvai Gorge is where the oldest evidence of human existence has been found. Like this, basically a footprint in volcanic soil that's been preserved. But when you make this bumpy, dusty drive out there, and it's $35 per person just to enter, and there's just this little shack museum with like one room in it, and half of it's dedicated to a bike journey some Japanese guy took to trace the steps of humanity from Africa to Asia. Like half of it's that, and then there's just a mold of this guy's foot. And you're like, I came all this way for that. But I remember making a point of saying, no, but this is, as far as we know, the first like proof that, you know, that this is the cradle of mankind and this is where humanity. So I remember standing on this cliff side, looking out over this rugged, dusty terrain, which I'm sure did not look like this when humanity was first there. But just trying to put myself in that headspace of like, wow, like it began here, or if it didn't, it began close to here.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And that's why I find those category of sites quite challenging. But there's always something to be impressed about. Like there's one on the coast in Denmark that we went to where it's literally just a cliff with a line of rock strata, maybe about 2 inches in width, or in height, sorry. The cliffs are all white except for this one stripe of black. And the reason that it's a World Heritage Site is because some people were looking at the cliffs and they, well, some scientists, not just random people.
Just random. Yo, bro, what's up with that cliff?
Just some Danes, like, you know.
I don't know why you had a California accent. That's my Danish accent as well.
But yeah, there were some scientists were studying the rock in the cliff, and they worked out that this unusual strip of black rock had a really high mineral content that was only in meteorites. It's not found particularly on Earth. It was really rich in this layer. And then they realized that that layer coincided with about 65 million years ago. And I'm sure you can see where this is going, is they were like, huh. So there was a mass extinction event 65 million years ago that killed off the dinosaurs. And layer of rock with meteorite, essentially, content in it. And so that's basically where the whole theory of the meteorite killing the dinosaurs came from, is just this random cliff in Denmark that is now a heritage site.
And it's crazy because if you hadn't done your research ahead of time, you probably wouldn't have even known. A, you wouldn't have known that cliff was there, but even if you had, you'd have just driven by and probably like, oh, there's a weird line on that cliff. Keep going.
That's a pretty cliff.
Yeah, that's right. Well, it's, to be honest, it's not even that easy to see, even knowing what to look for. You're sort of squinting at the cliff. The cliff's probably 25, 30 meters high, maybe. And you're sort of squinting at it going, oh, I think that's it. I think it's over there. And then eventually you work out, once you see it, you know, it's like, oh yeah, exactly. There, it's, that's where it is. So, yeah.
That's crazy.
Cool. Hmm.
Like, but it's, it, I mean, it is, like, I'm sure a site like that probably got in, like, based on like, years of campaigning from the local government, I'd imagine.
Yeah, it can do, definitely. I'm not sure with that specific one. But yeah, there is certainly some sites just sail straight through. Mm-hmm. Other sites
like Machu Picchu. Like, I'm sure if there wasn't a huge like argument against Machu Picchu. Well, it's yeah, just a ruin of a mountain, so. Guys. Yeah.
Sorry, go. Yeah.
I was just gonna say because it can be big business. Like we were talking about Mie Prefecture's Kamano Kodo. They were so fucking excited that they were on the World Heritage List because that they kind of had this idea that being on there meant tourists would come.
Yeah.
Which at the time had not happened yet. Like they were like, soon though, people will come.
But judging about what's on the World Heritage List, it's not an automatic tourist will come.
It doesn't automatically make you a hotspot, which is unfortunate because as you'll probably attest, the Kamano Kodo is stunning.
Yes.
But it's such a big list and a lot of people only know the, you know, the top 20 or the top 50 or maybe the top 100 even, that it's easy to get lost in the shuffle.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think that's probably one of the issues with it as well is that when people do treat it as a tourism list, which it certainly can be that. And, you know, if you look at the places on there, it's not a bad idea to say, okay, well, I'd like to see that and that and that and, you know, sort of go from there. But at the same time, encouraging as many people as possible to go there is kind of the opposite of what it's actually trying to do. Well, yeah,
how do you preserve a place when you've got people climbing all over it and building Subway restaurants in it?
Yeah, totally. So, like, one example of that is in Georgetown in Malaysia. I don't know if you guys have been there.
I think, have you been there, Rochelle?
I actually haven't.
No, oh, okay. I know. I mean, I know what Georgetown's, like, famous for, but what have they done to it? What's happened?
Well, so, essentially, it's on the World Heritage List because it's sort of a 19th century British colonial trading port, right? And it's got beautiful colonial architecture from the Victorian era and all these lovely houses and stuff, and it's a big Malaysian Chinese enclave as well, so there's lots of you know, the Chinese Malay influence and stuff, and it's really nice. But then it gets on the World Heritage List and people start coming to see what's so great about it, and then, you know, before you know it, the community that was there is getting pushed out for Airbnbs, and suddenly there's guys with like flashing lights on their tuk-tuks driving around blaring music. And
oh god,
we were just in Malacca, which is very similar to Georgetown, and yeah, the flashing light tuk-tuks are a thing.
Playing like the Baby Shark song from speakers
on that little bridge over the river. Over
yeah, the one on Yonkers Walk.
Yes, that's right. So Malacca is actually part of Georgetown, and Malacca are the same site.
There, oh, there we go.
Yeah.
Well, we've been to another one.
Check that off the list.
There you go. Tick.
But we've had a whole episode about the dangers of over-tourism. And so it's interesting that even something like the World Heritage List, which is designed with very noble intentions, can inadvertently lead to a place getting overdeveloped or over-touristed. Or, I mean, I'm sure you've been to the Great Wall of China, right?
Yeah, that was...
And if you've, which part did you go to?
Which section? Because that's important.
Did you go to Baraling or did you go to one of the off-the-beaten-path, like, less open to tourists areas?
So we went to Mutianyu.
Okay, so it's pretty nice at Mutianyu, but it does also have a...
A slide.
A cable car, a slide and a toboggan run.
Yeah. What we did was we had a tour guide from, I think, Get Your Guide or Kluk or one of those, and he actually took us on a hike to the top, not on the wall. So we kind of got off the bus where everyone else gets off the bus, and then we got into some random guy's car who drove us a few k's down the road, and then we had like a really steep walk just kind of through the forest.
That sounds
and
like then, a Giunco. Like an old, was it an old like crumbling section of wall that ended eventually at Mutianyu?
No, so we, when we finally finished the walk, we were at, I think, Tower 20 or 22 or something like that at Mutianyu.
Okay.
Okay.
Okay, cool.
It's basically as far as you can go on the restored bit at Mutianyu. We started there.
Oh, okay.
That's where we were supposed to get off.
Yeah, that's what we were supposed to do, but we didn't. We
oops. We didn't find that, so we just, after hiking all of Jenko, we just then had to hike all of Mutianyu, and oh, my legs collapsed, and I was the most exhausted I've ever been in my entire life.
Michelle's poor 70-year-old father was like, are they trying to kill us? What is going on? Because it's like...
He was better off than I was. I was dying.
But but Bada Ling is the official tourist section of the Great Wall, and not only is it insanely crowded, there's literally a Subway restaurant like at the entrance, and it just feels so like exploitative and sort of wrong, you know? Like it would
but
be
like Chinese people want to go there because like that's the most famous section and it has historical importance. But still, I would much rather go to a section that's not just wall to wall people.
But that's the problem, because it's like got that recognition and that name value. It's basically defeated the purpose. Like, I'm sure when they listed it as a World Heritage Site, it wasn't because it had a Subway station and a Subway restaurant and a Starbucks. Like, they were probably like, no, don't stop that. Stop putting those.
But who doesn't want a nice coffee when they're hiking the Great Wall?
If I want a nice coffee, I'm not going to go to Starbucks.
True. Me either.
Don't insult my hometown.
The Seattle girl here is just twitching in the eye. No. Boeing, Microsoft, Amazon. Weird question. Is it possible to get removed from the World Heritage List? Like, a site's ever taken off?
It is, actually. And it has happened twice.
Damn. Oh, shit. Okay, let's hear this story.
Okay, so the story behind the first one was... I think it was in Oman, and it was a sanctuary for oryx, which are, like... I think they're desert cats creatures. Or something like that.
I just know about them from Oryx and Crake, the book. That's it. Okay.
Wow, more than me. anyway, so they had this sanctuary for oryx there. And I think there weren't any more oryx. And so they basically went back to UNESCO and said, look, there's none here, so there's no point. So just take it off.
Oh, yeah, that makes sense.
That's
so they took themselves off.
Oh, that's nice of them, man. They didn't just try and... I suppose people were probably showing up being like, where's all the oryx at? And they're like, bruh. We have llama now.
Yeah.
Everyone, sorry, again, is Californian news. In my...
Bruh.
Bruh. In Oman. Bruh. And what was the second one?
Well, the second one was actually much more controversial. So the second one was actually in Germany, in the city of Dresden. And it was about the River Elbe, which obviously flows through the middle of the city. Mm-hmm. And the local government wanted to build a massive bridge straight across the river and straight through the World Heritage Site. And they argued with UNESCO for years about the impact that it was going to have on the landscape. And because I think how nice the landscape looked was kind of part of the reason it was on the list.
Yeah, that makes sense.
And I don't think the bridge was particularly sympathetic to the way it looked. So
like they didn't have like a design in mind that complemented it. It was just like, there's a bridge.
Yeah, pretty much. I think it was something like that. And I think they were really... from memory, I think the local government were quite stubborn about what they wanted to do and what they were going to do and what they ended up doing. And sort of eventually UNESCO said, okay, well, you can build your bridge, fine, but you're not on the World Heritage List anymore. So it got taken off.
Snap. So they, by building a bridge, they burnt a bridge.
Oh.
They certainly did.
They couldn't just pick a pretty design, you know, like, because I feel like there are probably plenty
these
of bridges,
the
like the Tower Bridge in London.
These are the Germans. They're practical people.
Yes, but come on.
This bridge has optimum efficiency for getting across this river.
I'm sure there are plenty of really nice bridges on the World Heritage List.
I would imagine so.
So, like, you could just build a beautiful bridge. Like, there's one here in Tbilisi that's just stunning.
Yeah.
You know, and then they probably wouldn't have had as much of an issue with it.
Yeah, I think it was just the impact that it was having, not just on the landscape, but I think sort of on the area around it as well and stuff like that. So, yeah, I think it was just disturbing the whole valley or something like that. So I don't remember the exact details, but it was something like that. And I think they were all quite stubborn about it. There's a whole list of World Heritage in danger as well.
I was about to ask, what kind of... Because obviously they're designed to protect, but a lot of people... politically are of the opinion that the UN is kind of a toothless tiger in a lot of ways these days. Yeah. Is there any actual penalty, or is it just, well, you're off the list, young man?
So by signing up to UNESCO, by ratifying the convention, you're essentially agreeing to enforce locally through legislation that you will protect and preserve the sites that are on the list. So you can't just add something to the list, then market it to everyone saying, hey, come visit us, we're on the World Heritage List, and then, you know,
bulldoze it.
build like a 50-story building in the middle of it. So
yeah. Interesting. All right. So
I'm just thinking too of like when I lived in Washington, D.C., I went to college at George Washington, for anyone who's from the U.S., and like we're kind of, we're very close to the White House, like downtown Washington, D.C., and it's very interesting. I don't know if they're World Heritage listed or I guess like City Heritage listed. I'm not quite sure what the exact name of what it was, but basically a lot, even some of our dormitories were some sort of heritage listed. So basically what they could do, they wanted to build this super dorm. So what they did was they knocked three dorms down to build a super dorm, but they had to keep the facades of all of the three dorms there. So they had to keep kind of the front of the building, and then they would all lead back into this one super dorm. Wow. But they a lot of the facades of the buildings were heritage listed, but the actual inside wasn't. So you just had to keep the front face
the same.
There
are definitely ways around it. Like, at least, I don't know, like, is national heritage is a totally different thing, I believe. Like, it's not related to the UN, is it? Yeah.
I would assume that not all of these buildings on our campus are, like, World Heritage listed.
Well, like, in my hometown, near my hometown, a little town called Glen Innes, kind of a shithole. But its main street is listed as heritage listed, and it's not UNESCO heritage listed. But it is very pretty. Like, you know, it's got that old-timey colonial thing going on, but it's only the facade. So beyond that facade, they can build whatever they want in those spaces, but they're not allowed to hang neon signs or change anything about that, or they'll lose that national heritage listing. Now, obviously, national heritage is probably not worth nearly as much in terms of name value, but it's, I imagine the UNESCO situation is similar.
Yeah, so I think the way UNESCO works, I'm not 100% sure, but it's basically something like the national heritage protection that would be under would also apply to stuff on the World Heritage List. If you wanted to take something off your national heritage list, like, say, Glen Innes, that would probably not be that difficult to do politically. However, if you wanted to take something off the World Heritage List, even though it's coming off essentially the same local list, I think that would be much more difficult to accomplish. So,
That makes sense.
Funnily enough, the Australian government has tried twice to get stuff taken off the list. Well, they started the process, but then never went through with it. So,
So they could mine it or log it?
Both.
Oh, really? What were they?
Well, they tried to get part of this is the Tony Abbott government a few years ago. They tried to get part of the Great Barrier Reef delisted. The whole thing, just a part of it.
Just part.
So that just they the part they wanted to dump. Yeah, of course. Oh, fuck.
For the coal ships going in and out of that mine in Queensland. And the other one was in Tasmania. There's basically about a third of Tasmania is covered by a wilderness World Heritage Area, which we visited quite recently, and is coming up onto my channel, so look out for that.
Oh, all right.
But yeah, they wanted to delist that so that they could go logging in the forests.
Oh, God, I hate
guys. These forests it sounds like are thousands Alaska. Of years old.
I hate Australia so much sometimes. It's so
I can see the US government doing the same exact thing with Alaska and being like, but there's oil here, guys.
Yeah, exactly. It's oil.
You guys, there's like a whole subgenre of horror where you guys dig up Indian burial
grounds. Yes, to build a wall or something with Mexico.
Zero fucks about history.
This is how horror movies start.
The only history you guys seem to care about is like Confederate general statues in the South, and then you fucking lose your minds. Can't take that down. That's our history.
Or George Washington and Lincoln.
Or George Washington and Lincoln. Yeah. That's and true. Eventually, all of the Trump monuments you'll build on that wall that seals you all in your post-apocalyptic Handmaid's Tale style dystopia.
Excuse me, it's a wall-like structure, aka a fence.
You guys can build a wall. You guys build a wall. Build a wall. It can be airtight. We'll just fill it with water. It's fine.
Maybe we can get it UNESCO heritage listed.
Maybe.
So on the more serious topic of World Heritage sites being destroyed or damaged. I mean, I imagine that that's happened during, especially during wartime. Like, are there any that are, like you said, there's a list of ones that are under threat. Are any like major ones that people might have heard of currently being threatened? Or
certainly the ones in Syria. There's about 10 sites in Syria, and I don't think there's really been a proper assessment done of that.
Wow!
Because the civil war is ongoing, they haven't been able to send people in and to really look around and say, you know, what have we got left? So, but I think there's certainly been a lot of damage to a lot of them. And the same in Yemen. There's 4 or 5 sites in Yemen. Mm. And of course, there's been a civil war there for 10 years or more, I think. It happens all over the world, unfortunately. Yeah. Again, Afghanistan, there's 2 sites there. You guys might remember... I think it was in the 90s, there was these enormous statues of Buddha carved into a cliff.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And the Taliban blew them up.
Blew them up, yeah. That's like that's a very good example of, a horrible example, but of terrorism, because you're not only, you know, striking fear into people, but you're destroying something of immense cultural and historic significance as like a fuck you to everyone else.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, absolutely. And those statues were on the World Heritage List, and they still are. And there's actually debate about them, because people say, well, okay, the Buddha statues aren't there anymore, so we should take them off. But then there's a counter argument that says, well, they're not, but there's plenty of things that were there that aren't there anymore that are still on the World Heritage List.
Yeah.
So, you know, we should leave them there for posterity, kind of thing.
And plus, in a way, it's kind of like acknowledging what the Taliban did there is part of history as well. Like, you should preserve the memory that these shitty people did something terrible to an amazing, important site.
But then you get into that debate, too, of, okay, let's say in the future, do they rebuild the statues and say this is what it used to look like? Or do they leave, like, the rubble there? You know what I mean? it's the same with, like, the Great Wall. Some of the sections are refurbished and others are crumbling. Yeah, it's like, do you rebuild it and show what it used to look like, or do you just leave it?
Yeah, well, so there's quite a few sites, particularly ancient ones, that are sort of heavily reconstructed that you might not realize are actually that way. Quite a lot of them, really. Ancient temples and things like, you know, Roman ruins and stuff, that they look like they've been standing forever, but they may not have looked exactly like that for the last 2,000 years and...
If you visit South Korea, for example, nearly all of the temples and palaces there, 60 years old, because during the Korean War, North Korea made a habit of burning down or destroying anything that they passed.
Wasn't the Globe Theatre as well that we just visited in London, wasn't that just a recreation?
Yeah, the Globe Theatre we visited. I imagine
that's... Is it burned down?
Yeah, that's definitely reconstructed.
They, like, moved it as well. It wasn't actually in that spot.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, but... In a way, I think that's fine, as long as you're true to the spirit and the architectural concepts of the time. Like the Globe Theatre, they have built it with the thatched roof, even though that means that they have to have firefighters visit once a week to ensure that it's done right.
And an intensive sprinkler system.
Yeah, the Korean temples and palaces, the same thing. Like, they're built to the specification, as best they can, they're built as they were.
Mm.
Yeah, absolutely. So what's actually really interesting about that is that that's how UNESCO actually got started. So the organization dates back to the 1950s. The World Heritage List only started in the late 70s, but during the 1950s, when the Egyptian government was building the Aswan Dam on the Nile River, people realized that actually when they build this dam, it's going to flood this huge area, and all of these ancient Egyptian treasures are just going to be drowned. The most famous of those is one called Abu Simbel. I don't know if you guys know that one.
Oh, yeah, I know the name, yeah.
Yeah, it's probably one of the most famous monuments in Egypt, and it's absolutely my favorite. I loved it way more than the pyramids. And they realized that, when they build this dam and flood the whole area, that's now going to be underwater. So there was this international effort. All these countries put in money and experts and manpower, and they literally moved the temple brick by brick.
I had no idea.
Like a Lego set. That. Yeah, they moved it.
Damn. Mm. I mean, good on them.
So where you see it now is hundreds of meters from where it used to be, and it's just in a fake hill.
Wow. But yeah, I mean, I feel like that's, if given the option of that or lose it, I mean, of course we should preserve that, even if it's not as it originally was.
Yeah, absolutely. Another interesting one on the same topic is the city of Warsaw in Poland.
Yeah.
Because obviously it was completely obliterated during World War II. Like, just everything was rubble. And so what they did is they could pretty much use old photos and paintings and basically the piles of bricks and stones that were there, and they rebuilt everything exactly as it had been before. And so that's on the World Heritage List as well. Not because of, you know, not because it's ancient buildings or, you know, whatever, because, I mean, it's certainly very beautiful and it's culturally very important, but the World Heritage focus is actually on the rebuilding. That, you know, there's a huge brick cathedral that was only built in the 1950s because, you know, they had to rebuild it after getting bombed.
That's really interesting, yeah. Do, what was I going to say? Is there, this is a kind of an abrupt topic change, but we're running towards the end of our time. So with the World Heritage List, is there something out there that you're surprised isn't World Heritage listed? Like, that you're just like, how is this not being listed yet? Or is it, are they pretty good about getting all the important stuff?
Up until last year, I would have said yes. There was two, I think, very big misses from the World Heritage site. From the World Heritage List. And those were the temples at Bagan in Myanmar. Also, that only got listed last year.
That's crazy.
And so did the Plain of Jars in Laos.
Oh.
And what, was it like a political thing? Like, the government, like, wasn't lobbying for it, or... what was the reason for this?
Yeah, it's kind of that. So the biggest reason was actually, talking specifically about Bagan, was that in the 1970s there was an earthquake that heavily damaged a lot of the temples. And so the military government basically put them straight back together, but they did it in a really slapdash way. They didn't ask any sort of experts about architecture or the time periods. They didn't use appropriate materials. You know, when you go to the sites like My Sơn in Vietnam, there's been a lot of reconstruction there, but, you know, they're very careful to use the same bricks and the same mortar. Yeah. And, you know,
otherwise it looks really jarring.
Yeah, exactly. So, but in Bagan, they'd basically just used concrete and, you know, so that kind of looks about right. We'll just put that up there. So, excuse me. And then in 2016, there was another earthquake and that heavily damaged the temples again. But what happened this time was that most of the damage was actually the repairs that they'd done. That's how bad they were.
Jeez,
basically, of course.
All of the fix jobs that they'd done fell off. So,
modern construction basically, right there.
Yeah. And so because they were more engaged with the outside world, that meant they were more inclined to bring in experts and that kind of thing to then start the process of rebuilding and fixing and all that kind of stuff. And I don't think they had particularly good protection laws either. So, yeah, I would say that was certainly the biggest miss from the World Heritage List.
Well, it's good that there were some, because otherwise that question would have really sucked. You're like, no, Chris, everything of importance is already on it. Yeah. Except for the Gleninus main street. It's not on there yet. I keep fighting,
never
guys.
Or the Superdome.
I can just imagine your mom fighting for this cause.
Mom doesn't like Gleninus. It's full of meth head. For people who want to do what you're doing, obviously we'll get you at the end. We'll let you plug all your socials and we'll put them in the episode description. Yeah. But there's people who are interested in pursuing a similar goal of seeing as many or all of the World Heritage sites. Where do you get started? Is there a good resource, aside from probably the UNESCO website, is there like a good resource for people who want to do it?
So I'd actually say the best place to start is the UNESCO website. It's just whc.unesco.org /list, I think. But what I'd recommend people do is just look at your own country and see what's near you. Because you might be surprised.
Makes sense.
Like, there's one in the center of Sydney that, you know, I've lived here all my life, essentially, and I'd never really been to. And it's a site that's about Australia's convict heritage. And it's just a few random buildings. Well, they're not random, of course, but there's just a few different buildings which I'd never actually been to. So you look at it and go, oh, actually.
Where is that in the rocks?
So it's Old Government House in Parramatta.
Oh, wow. I would not have expected that. Yeah.
Kind of reminds me of Pokemon Go and geocaching.
Wait, 1 second. I'll let you finish your thought, then we'll talk about Pokemon Go. So you were saying it's in Parramatta.
Old Government House, yeah. So that was actually the seat of power in the colony for about 50 years. Most of the governors worked from there.
Oh, interesting.
Until about the 1850s, yeah. And then there's a whole bunch of other sites in Tasmania as well. So it includes Port Arthur. I don't know if you've been there.
I have not been to Tasmania yet. It's a crime that I haven't, but I know it's stunning.
I actually only went about a month ago for the first time.
Oh, there we go. I feel less bad then.
I would highly recommend it. It's a beautiful place.
Oh, I've heard. I mean, I have a cousin who owns a B&B down there, and the photo she posts just looks stunning. Mm-hmm. And I'm just like, I'm just waiting for an excuse to go down there. It just hasn't happened yet, but it will. Because I want to go there so bad.
Yeah, absolutely.
Now, Rochelle, Kate's going to hate you for bringing up Pokemon Go.
Kate's not here.
Yeah. But, I mean, we talked about this a little bit with Chris on our episode about being a digital nomad. I'm not going to dwell on it long because Kate's probably listening to this as we edit, just flinching. But, weirdly enough, Pokemon Go and also geocaching are a really fun way to find places you might not know exist.
They have historic or cultural or artistic value.
Yeah. Now, obviously, they're not all going to be World Heritage sites, but I know when we were in Malacca, there were a lot of really unique historic buildings that probably helped contribute to Malacca even being listed that we would not have found if we weren't like, hey, there's a Pokestop like a kilometre away. Should we walk to that? And then we get there and it's like, holy shit, this is like this massive fort. How did we not know this was here?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Oh, cool.
Yeah. We're not going to dwell on it because...
Yeah, but it's just... I feel like it's similar because if you... A lot of times you don't realize what's in your backyard.
Yeah.
And you wouldn't... You'd have no idea unless you either played either of these apps or games or you looked at the World Heritage List. Like, you might be surprised that there's a couple sites in your own city that you would have never even thought to visit if it weren't for checking out the World Heritage List.
Literally, when we get off this call, when we finish recording, I'm going to jump on the website. I'm going to actually go through and see how many I've hit already without even knowing it. And let's see what else we can see here in Georgia, because it could be that there's
more... Can't leave the country, so
we're fucking stuck here now. But yeah, so you're saying the UNESCO website's pretty much the best resource, but you did mention that there was a whole Facebook community as
well. Yeah, I was going to ask, are there any good groups that people can join?
Is there a Reddit for it? Like, what are there any good communities to get people inspired?
So I haven't seen much on Reddit, and... there are groups on Facebook. If you just search for World Heritage Site and UNESCO and things like that, they come up.
Yep.
I would say if you're looking for a community, the absolute best one is called worldheritagesite.org.
Okay.
And it's run by a very lovely lady from the Netherlands who has been to 800 and something World Heritage Sites. So
nice.
She's done quite well.
Yeah.
Sure. There's a good...
Is there like a leaderboard? Has someone finished? Like, is there someone who's like, I'm done?
No, nobody has finished that I know of anyway.
Wow.
That's crazy.
The person who has done the best that I know of is... I'm just pulling it up.
Yeah, no, pull it up. But, I'm curious to see.
I know he's a Turkish man.
Yeah.
He's been to 900 and something. Let me pull up the exact number.
Holy crap. So he's getting close.
937 he's been to.
Damn. But they're going to add more this year and he's going to just drift a little bit further off.
Well, funnily enough, the conference this year is supposed to be held in Fujian. I'm not sure the exact dates, but it's probably in July, I think.
It may not happen.
Yeah. I wouldn't be putting money on it just yet.
I feel like why can't they teleconference that shit? Like, I'm sorry, you don't need to meet in a big room full of people coughing. You can just all jump on a massive conference call.
I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if things are mostly better in China by July, but then the rest of the world, you know what I mean? Like, you've got people flying in from all over the world.
Basically every country is part of UNESCO. I don't think all of them go, but you certainly have people from, say, 100 countries, I would think, at least sending representation. So
yeah.
Yeah, it's certainly something to consider.
We'll watch this space. Yeah, shit. I didn't know. Like, it's weird to think that July might not be okay. Fingers crossed, touch wood, that it will be. But
I hope
it's
so.
It's a weird fucking year.
Oh, totally. We were supposed to, our next trip we had booked was, we were going back to China in May.
Oh, no.
Yeah, so we booked this in November, I think, and was all through January and February. It was like, oh, we'll just wait a bit longer, and yeah, nah, not going to happen, I don't think. So.
No.
You can go, you just have a two-week quarantine, and then after your 2 weeks, you can do whatever you want with the mask.
Then I can fly home.
Yay!
Excellent.
Yeah, it's definitely a tough time. We've got our wedding in Seattle in July, and we're like pretty confident it'll be fine, but my mum's already a little like, I booked flights, they're not covered for pandemics, what's going to happen? And I'm like, who knows? We'll just have to wait and see. The world might be burning by then, so we don't know. On that happy note, do you want to drop all of your socials? As I said, we'll share them in the description so people don't need to frantically write them down, but where can people find you on the interwebs?
So the main place is the YouTube channel, and that's youtube.com/worldheritagejourney. I also have a blog where we write about different types of World Heritage sites, different places you can go, and that's just worldheritagejourney.com.
Nice.
I'm also on Facebook as World Heritage Journey. And I also am on Instagram, though I don't really use it, and I'm Joel on the road there. So just like you.
Just a dude on the road.
Dude on the road.
Before we officially wrap up, I would be remiss if we didn't play everyone's favorite game, which is called Live, Visit, Flee. So I'm going to give you three places, and Rochelle's going to frantically think of three of her own right now.
You didn't tell me.
You've got time.
I would have prepared.
Like, you choose one to live in, you choose one to visit, and you choose one to never go to again. It's basically fuck, marry, kill, but for places.
Okay.
Sure.
So I'm going to give you three. I'm going to give you countries. So I'm going to say China, Italy, and Russia.
Okay, and so
China, Italy, Russia, live, visit, flee. And ignore the current conditions. Obviously,
I was
going to
say,
no one's going to Italy right now.
China, Italy, and the US.
All right. What have we got? Live, visit, flee.
Okay, so Russia, I think, has to be visit. I haven't been to Russia. There's a lot of World Heritage sites there. A lot of them look absolutely fascinating, and I can't wait to go there. So I'm going to say Russia for visit.
Yep.
Which leaves me with a really tough choice.
Only one of them has a government that'll kill you for making the wrong call.
Yeah, that's very true.
It's all right. She on the other hand, listen to this podcast.
Well, you don't know that he might.
We're just really just famous. Like, in China.
He mentioned my name. Chris mentioned my name.
I do drink way too much coffee for my own good. So I think I'm going to have to say live in Italy.
Okay. And
but I don't
want to
flee China.
Yeah. Well,
I do love China. I do love China.
It's a tough call to make. I mean, if it was easy, it wouldn't be a very fun game.
True. I think, actually, if I can rationalize it out, I would love to visit China, and then after about 3 or 4 weeks, then I would probably want to flee.
Yes. That's probably
there we
fair.
Go.
Fair. You lived there for 5 years.
Yeah, yeah. But I mean, when I did leave, I was definitely ready to flee. What about you, Rochelle? What are your three?
Every other week. I still miss China.
I do.
Okay. I guess we'll do Mie Prefecture in Japan, Northern Norway, and where's another interesting?
Tasmania.
And Tasmania.
Getting super specific.
Yep.
Northern Norway.
Where that post is. Oh, wait, no. Where were the cliffs?
No, leave the post.
Cliffs. No, where were the cliffs?
Oh, it's Denmark.
Denmark near the cliffs. Northern Norway where the post is. Or Mie Prefecture near the Kumamoto in Japan.
There we go. You've lost Tasmania as an option.
Sorry.
Okay. All right. I'm going to say flee for Northern Norway.
Norway.
It's expensive.
It's so expensive. And as beautiful as the country is, there was something about it. Like, we spent, I think it was about 2 weeks in Norway, and we drove from top to bottom. And there was just kind of something about it that once you got past the incredible scenery, it just wasn't doing it for me. And I don't quite know what that is. And apologies to any Norwegian listeners, but yeah, I'm going to have to say flee on that one.
Yeah. Well, I have now. I've done the unsubscribe.
Beautiful country, right. But yeah.
So we're fleeing Northern Norway. Then,
yeah, and then so I've got the cliffs in Denmark and the Kamano Kodo.
Area of Japan. No, like just in the general, like
how do you
within
live?
30 minutes of those places.
Yeah, how do you even? Oh, okay. Because I was about to say, how do you live
like
in
a town
in Denmark? You just burrow
no,
in.
No, like in the nearest town.
Okay.
Look, in Denmark, everywhere's kind of half an hour away. So
there we go.
Nearest town. How about that?
Wow. Tough call. I'm going to say live in Japan.
Yeah. Because
I think Japanese food gets it. Japanese
yeah,
food's
does.
Better than Danish food. Denmark has great hot dogs there.
Oh, really? There we go.
Yeah.
I love Japan, so I'd live pretty much anywhere unless you said, like, Fukushima. I'd be like, yep, live.
Yeah. Yeah, we've got to go back to Japan, so looking forward to that.
You and me both. I actually want to hike the Kamano Kodo again and then do a bunch of other stuff I haven't done. So.
Yes.
Yeah. Excellent.
Well, all right. Shit. Thank you for coming on. It's been fun having a chat. We need to catch up again in person and drink some beers and talk smack and make fun of Stavros, the Greek waiter that Karen had an affair with on her cruise. Inside joke. No one will get that. I don't know why I brought that up on the podcast.
I would say come to Tbilisi, but they probably won't let you in.
Yeah. Come to Tbilisi sometime.
Take
you on a World Heritage listed wine tour, unless you've already done it. Even then, we'd still do it.
It's on the list.
But for everyone listening at home, thanks for tuning in this week. Kate will be back soon. She's had to flee to the United States to escape coronavirus. But we will see you next week. And don't forget, rate, review, subscribe, airdrop that shit. And Rochelle, on the count of three, you're going to say see you next Tuesday with me, okay?
Okay.
So we will
see you next Tuesday.
It says that spells cunt.